are in Pittsburgh, actually, at the Allegheny County Health Department, where Jim is employed, and it's April 5th, 2002. The purpose of the interview is to talk about the great boycott that was run in Pittsburgh during the late 60s and early 70s, and Jim was an active participant in the boycott, and we'll be discussing some questions and some of his experiences on this interview. To begin, I'm wondering, Jim, if you would mind just talking a little bit about yourself to give a little bit of perspective on who, you know, your background and also what you might be doing now, and so that those who listen to the tape might have some reference point for who you are.
Okay, I'm not sure I know what part of me you want me to discuss. At the time of the late 60s, I had just come out of the major seminary and was in town for my first full-time job, which was with a social service agency. It was a part of the poverty program at the time, and was a short time after that newly married, and had an opportunity to meet some wonderful people who were also interested in some of these politically active issues. I had spent a summer in 1965 in outside of Phoenix in a little Mexican American town that was mostly families of farm workers. Mm-hmm. So when the Rojas family came to town, I didn't need a lot of coaxing to understand the circumstances that they were talking about, so I got involved.
Okay, thank you. I have to ask you also, when we get into the questions, I'd like to get your oral consent, just that this is okay, that we're doing this on tape just
sure.
Before we proceed. So thanks very much before we get into some of the questions. And you've already answered some of the things that we'll get to about involvement, but I'm wondering if you remember how you first got involved in the Great Boycott. Is there any memory that you have about when you first remember becoming involved right in Pittsburgh?
Someone had contacted me to introduce me to Al Rojas. He came to me one day, I guess it was at lunchtime or something, while I was still at my office, and started to talk about why he was sent from California, and his family was there, and he was wondering if I could participate in some way, and somehow through that I introduced him to my wife as well, and we went to some meetings about it. I think the initial meetings were at their house over at the north side, and that's how I got started.
Okay, and let's see, to thinking, I'm giving dates about 67 to 70, you said you had come out of the seminary. You want to guess about what age you were during this time period?
Actually it was around the summer of 68 when Al caught up with me. I was I was 25.
Okay, that's good. And what was your particular role in the boycott? Did you remember actively picketing or making phone calls or speaking to groups about the boycott, or perhaps, you know, all of these?
I remember quite a few opportunities to do some picketing, and I remember being part of some of the planning sessions. We made signs together. We did a little bit of everything together. I don't remember much in terms of the phone calling, but other than that, just about everything else.
Because you were, describe yourself probably as one of the more active people in the boycott at that time.
Absolutely.
Right? Correct?
Yeah.
I'm correct in that.
Sometimes, okay. I would be at the Giant Eagle with somebody like Dave Horowitz, passing out leaflets to people just walking in and do their shopping. And sometimes it would be something more of a group activity where we would be at a market in Shadyside, or some of the supermarkets up in the south side of Pittsburgh, where there was a little more of a hostile atmosphere, and it was even best to be in more of a group than just one or two people to let people know that farm workers needed some support.
Oh, okay, thank you. And what affiliation do you think would best describe you personally in the boycott? Were you part of a student group? Would you say you were a member of a religious community, a union member, a political activist, or maybe more than one of these categories would describe you?
I didn't see myself at that point as a part of a student. I wasn't a student at the time, except I did some night school part-time at Pitt, but wasn't. It had nothing to do with this. I was not involved through Pitt. But I was just a political activist that had an interest in this field.
Okay, thanks. And I have a few questions about the Rojas family. You did say that you did meet Al at your office, and
yes.
Then you did go to his house at different times. You were visited the house many times. And also, I was going to ask you about your experience with Mexican American people before this, but you have said that you already were familiar with a lot of the problems in the cultural situation.
Yeah,
from
I lived with a family who, in fact, was the local contact for the Industrial Areas Foundation at the time. Saul Alinsky had sent an organizer there the previous summer, and the person who was the point person, I guess you could say the local coordinator, was the head of the household where I lived. So I spent the summer there. I was working with the Diocese of Tucson at the time, doing some surveys of South Phoenix and running some adult discussion groups in different people's homes in Guadalupe, the little town outside of Phoenix, which is now part of Phoenix. But it was quite an interesting experience. I had prior to that, I had no contact with Mexican Americans, either as a group or as individuals. Mm-hmm. So the summer of 65 was a real eye-opening experience to me as to an ethnic group that most people in Pittsburgh would have little contact with.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot. And in terms of the Rojas family, looking back, obviously, after many years, what did you feel would be the role in terms of the family coming? There was Albert and Elena. Do you have any views looking back about what you felt was Albert's role and Elena's role, if they were the same or they really had different roles in the Pittsburgh community?
I thought it was great that the whole family came, kids mm-hmm. and all. It was really nice. Made the issues very human to me. It was not just a theoretical thing or just somebody's job or anything. It really felt good to be part of this family's effort to marshal interest and support for them and their the people they were advocating for. I saw Albert certainly as the primary leader, but Elena was very strong-minded herself, and she was part of a lot of not just the planning, but some of the activities themselves. If we ever get to the story about the time a few of us got arrested, I'll tell you how she can participate.
Okay, I think we'll have some time to talk about favorite stories. Reserve some time for that. Okay, thanks. And in terms of the boycott community, and we're talking about other people who worked on it with you, did you get to know any members of the community on the boycott you perhaps may not have run into before this time or worked with at all?
I did. That's how I mentioned Dave Horowitz. I had never met him before, and he was a political activist also. He was active not just with the Democratic Party, but also with some community activism down in McKees Rocks, where there was a real bad, corrupt political situation that he and Father Fisher had worked together to break up. And I didn't know anything about it. And I was at other ends of this county doing other things with I was part of the group that was trying to get the senator elected in 68. Who was running against Bobby Kennedy then? It's been so long.
Eugene McCarthy.
McCarthy, yeah. Right. Too many fights, too many.
Yeah, many candidates.
Yeah, here. But lots of different things. We were on different, but similar types of activities in different parts of the town. And I've met a number of other people like that.
Besides Dave, were there any other people that you might have gotten to know better just in that time that you can recall offhand as many years later?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the names right now because I've had very little contact with many of those same people since those activities were pretty well resolved.
Right.
It's interesting how we coalesced. We were good friends at the time and were helpful. There was a couple of people from the, was it the Butchers Union that we got to know pretty well?
Yeah, meat cutters, but I think, right.
Starts with a B.
Bud Letty.
No, the last name was a father's son that came. I think the father was in the meat union and or was it the baker's union? And the son was a painter or something, private contractor. Mm-hmm. I forget now. But the number of people that I got to know on many levels while we were involved, but just we didn't really continue. Knowing each other's friends. We were just working together as volunteers for something that meant something to us.
Okay. Now, out of the different groups that you met, could you say that you changed your opinion of any of the groups? And I've picked, I might name students, labor union members, political and religious activists, all those people you work with. Did your opinion change at all, either positively or negatively, about any of the groups when you look back?
Not really. I was kind of an angry young man before I got involved with this group. I remember in 1965 when I was still in the seminary, major seminary, there was a gentleman who came to town who was the chaplain for the president of Vietnam that was assassinated around that time. And shortly after that, and he was a very big supporter of the United States' role in Vietnam, but he admitted that John Foster Dulles came and warned him that the CIA was after him and hide, and he laughed it off, and 3 days later he was dead. So, I mean, he said this on stage, and he was a big supporter of the United States, so I understood the local and international implications of some things that were happening. I remember looking at a very shocked Bishop drive up when some of us were demonstrating against a draft test in 65, mm-hmm. when I was supposed to be in church watching ordination. So, yeah, I certainly didn't feel any hostility toward many of these groups. I guess I felt even closer by being an activist ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. And after we were talking about the fact that you didn't keep contact with some of the folks, but after the Great Boycott, a second family, the Valencias, came with other organizers from California for the lettuce boycott. Do you remember if you kept your involvement up, or did it end with the Great Boycott, or do you remember continuing any involvement with that new lettuce boycott that went on for a few more years?
Well, I participated in the lettuce boycott. I don't remember much about the other family. I did participate in it. It was interesting because it didn't seem to be such a well-coordinated or heated level of support. Mm-hmm. And so I could only, I felt strongly about the cause, especially because of my activities in 65, but I just didn't feel there was as much to be a part of at that point in Pittsburgh.
Right. So that you probably feel that the Great Boycott might have been a little more the sort of the main focus of the energies at that point in time for not only yourself but
right.
other people. Okay.
And it was kind of humorous because it was a lot easier talking to people about giving up grapes than it was about lettuce.
Talk about lettuce.
But I remember the smiles on people's face when you try to approach them about it.
Mm-hmm. Then, so the difference in just the tactics changed a little bit too. So it was slightly different. Well, no, that's good. Thanks a lot. And in terms of the labor community, I just wonder if you might try to recall that during the boycott, one of the activities that happened were leafleting and money collections that were held at numerous plant gates at the mostly the steel mills that were mm-hmm. still running then. And these, I think, were about 5 o'clock in the morning before dawn. And did you personally remember going on any of those activities?
I didn't go to any of the I guess you'd call them union-sponsored sites, for lack of a better term. I went more to the sites that were dedicated to the general public. There was an entry to the Sears parking lot, and there was a number of supermarkets, and there were the little grocery stores, and we had demonstrations of various types like that. But no informational sites that were, I guess you'd call it, more employer-centered or union-centered.
Right.
It was more broader than that, the ones I was involved with.
Okay, thank you. Also, those ones were probably not convenient for folks who had to work or something and really couldn't. I mean, the time was like really very early. It
if they were coming off the afternoon shift at 3 o'clock, I would still be at work. And
that's true with the kinds of industrial the shifts that were going on. Before this, and mainly you describe yourself as somebody who's from around the Pittsburgh area that had a lot of, at one time, industries. Had you worked particularly with union people yourself before this as a group, before the boycott?
No, I never did.
So this was the first time that you met maybe some of the members and officials of the labor unions at that time?
I may have met a few people prior to that on some of the political activities, partisan politics type political activities, but nothing that was very memorable, no.
Okay. And in, I know you were mentioning some of the meat cutters union before. Can you remember offhand the names of any of the unions that sort of were more present at that time offhand? And do any of the local unions, their names come to mind when you think back over
the
years?
Only ones that I think of that I associate with actively supporting the farm workers during that time was certainly the steel workers. They were very strong with it. And to some extent, the meat cutters and the Bakers Union. I don't remember the name of the Bakers Union, but those were the three that I associated with it.
Okay.
Not the trades, not the construction trades, anything like that.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about the building trades a little bit with about something I'm sure you remember. In terms of, we've talked about boycott and labor community. I just have a few questions about the religious community. At the time of the boycott, would you describe yourself as having had a religious affiliation at that time? Personally?
I was pretty much unchurched during that time. When I came out of seminary, I had some serious doctrinal concerns, and I had some serious bureaucratic concerns, and it didn't seem to be related to just to the Roman Catholic Church that I had the background in, because some of the same issues were raised in my mind in different ways with some of the other denominations. I didn't look outside the Christian community, but I certainly was looking, and I pretty much felt like it was like a lot of work to do, a little in my mind about my gaining peace and happiness through participation at the church level. But that changed later on, but at the time, I was pretty much unchurched.
Okay. And in light of the fact that there were members of religious communities, and just remembering some of the names, can you remember or name any of church members who were prominent, who you would describe as active, such as ministers, priests, rabbis, nuns, some Quaker activists? Just offhand, do you recall that they were a presence in the boycott?
As far as names, the three that come out right away are Monsignor Rice and Father McIlvain and Father Jack O'Malley. And they were good supporters. They were very interested, and I felt that they had a very sincere effort to be supportive without trying to lead, which was an interesting thing to see. There were some people from the Quaker Meeting House on Ellsworth Avenue that were part of some of the activities that we did, but I don't remember the names.
Right. But you remember that the community was. Okay. And
I think we even had a few meetings there, too, as a part of the group of the Great Boycott.
So that they would be providing their personal facilities for organizational meetings and that kind of support. Now, if in looking to right now, in the year 2002, do you think, is your personal opinion that religious groups would support a similar kind of labor activity, such as is going on now, like living wage and some of the state initiatives? Do you think that they would be as supportive of that today as they were then? And if you have any reasons why or why not, you might wonder if you might care to share that.
I felt at the time that the people that I dealt with, at least within the Roman Catholic group, were more the exceptions than the rule. I felt that they were not just people who were kind of spokesmen for the larger religious community, but rather people who had a special gift and somehow were allowed within the bureaucracy to share that gift, almost like in spite of, in some ways, the bureaucracy, like a lot of bureaucracies. But I think their role grew within that bureaucracy and within that institution, religious institution, over the years. But at the time, it wasn't, I don't think it was such a all that happy a relationship. I think I was delighted to hear the church support living wage efforts at the local Pittsburgh level, as well as some state efforts. I think it even the Pope had made a statement about it about a year ago, I believe, on the living wage, and it was an opportunity for some of the local spokesmen, not just the local bishop, I believe. Father O'Malley was quoted by some of the local radio, talk radio people, with comments about it, because they had spoken against the living wage as a editorial, and he responded quite well to them, and he did a very good job explaining that this was part and parcel of the religious tradition. He quoted encyclicals and quoted number of sources. It was very good, and I think this is an appropriate role. There's always going to be an issue about a lot of borderline businesses that may have difficulty meeting those goals, but that doesn't mean we can't have that goal and that we should strive to achieve it. It's very, very difficult to say that businesses should survive on the backs of those that they underpay. But on the other hand, you have to support those people for trying to develop jobs and develop those businesses as well. So I think the church has done a pretty good job at keeping it as an issue that is not personal, but as a principle.
Okay, thanks. And it's interesting the same names are appearing, even though there's this 30-year time jump and the same people are active. Moving on to some questions about
I don't hear those same kind of comments from other church bodies about the living wage and about the support, the economic justice issues that need to be said. I just don't see it. In one sense, it's easier for the Roman Catholic tradition to do that because they are more of a hierarchical organization, and it's a lot harder for some of those more congregationally based groups to coalesce as a larger institution about those issues. But I think it's a real shame that they're pretty much the primary movers, and I don't see anybody jumping on the bandwagon with them that could.
Okay, well, thank you. I'd like to talk about two conflicts that arose during the boycott, and I was just going to ask you if you were familiar with them, and also some of your opinions on it. And one was event that occurred was that during the time of the boycott, a major civil rights initiative had started in Pittsburgh called the Black Construction Coalition.
Oh, yeah.
And the movement originally was to integrate the unionized building trades, and during that campaign, I'm sure you remember, there were thousands of people who were demonstrating, hundreds were arrested, and I'm wondering if you do remember this.
I would have a hard time forgetting it. Whether you talk about the people involved, like Nate Smith, very colorful person who rather flamboyant, and I knew him more and more as I got involved, and also the issues involved. And to this day, it seems that my son was conceived on the night after one of the big demonstrations downtown, so I have a hard time forgetting about that. The Construction Coalition, as I recall, the two biggest demonstrations that we did had to do with the construction of the U.S. Steel Building and also the construction of the stadium.
Right, the Three Rivers Stadium. So, and you remember being personally involved, right?
Yeah, so, and I remember people right near me that got maced, and I remember from the steel building, people throwing rivets from those, I guess it was like from the 60th floor or whatever, throwing rivets down on the crowd, and the only people who were protected were the policemen with their helmets, and the rest of us were quite vulnerable to these dangerous, lethal weapons that were being hurled at us.
Oh, well, during the demonstrations, some of the people who were involved did carry the farm worker signs, and given the fact that the construction trades were unionized and they had supported the boycott, and then they saw these farm worker signs coming. Do you remember that being a little bit grating on people or some groups that the farm workers would be supporting the Black Construction Coalition as an issue and sort of taking a little bit of a issue with the union brothers and sisters who were not as quite on the same side in this?
In their own hometown. I don't remember much about that. Jump up as a memory.
Like a major thing. But in terms of that, you were involved. Obviously, these were sort of occurring at the same time.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thanks. And do you remember the time that Cesar Chavez actually came to Baltimore? To Pittsburgh to visit, and there were a series of demonstrations going on. It's around the October-November time. And do you remember that?
I remember he came. I don't remember much about it. There was a lot of things that happened in that time frame. It's been over 20 years, 30 years.
In that time, do you remembered hearing or recall that there was some political problems where some members, people who had been marching in the demonstrations, had been accused of being members of the Communist Party, and there was some conflict with, you do remember that, with the union people asking them to be removed,
that.
So you remember that as an issue.
Not necessarily when Cesar Chavez came, I remember that quite clearly, and I think that was an issue at that time with every social movement, some of the civil rights activities. Kind of reminds me of the conversation I had with some people who visited South Africa recently, and the people who were involved with the support of the change there and here, some of them were in fact affiliated with socialist or communist causes, but that in and of itself meant little to me if in fact they were on the side of economic justice and human rights. And some people couldn't get past that. I can understand where there was an issue about trying to smear the movement by trying to red bait the public about it, as if we were all somehow plotting to overthrow the government or something. None of that was ever true. But there could very well have been some of the people that I knew that were even card-carrying members of the Communist Party. They were not trying to do anything but justice rather than overthrow.
So this was not, personally for you, you did realize it was a point of contention for
issue.
Some people, but not...
It was an issue for many people, but I didn't see it as a valid issue.
Okay.
Except from the public relations point of view.
Okay, thanks.
If people were really trying to get the movement to look bad, looking for a vulnerable point that they could smear in the media.
Okay, thanks. And I just have a few questions about some of the symbols that were used. In terms of the farm worker struggle as compared with perhaps some other things you have involved or other people in Pittsburgh, do you remember that they had particular symbols such as the Welga flag with the Black
mm-hmm.
Thunderbird and the
we
banners?
Made, we made some of those.
Okay.
I remember afterwards, after the movement was no longer... a thing in Pittsburgh. I remember taking the material and covering some large foam, making large pillows out of them for my son to jump on and jump off the couch and have a playpen out of them, basically.
They were recycled.
I remember those symbols very much. By the way, I did remember the family I was telling you about that was involved with the, I think it was the Meat Cutters Union, Bortz.
Bortz.
And there was
Ed and Lou.
Yeah. And I think Julie was the wife of the young guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they were all very active and very concerned and fine people.
I recall them also, and I think I remember the father and son image was mm-hmm. very, very noticeable. Well, in terms of the images, that in terms of like people in Pittsburgh, were you personally were comfortable with the idea that this, I recall, the marches would be led by the Virgin, the Our Lady of Guadalupe, the banners. For you, is that was not uncomfortable for you? You felt it was part of the culture, and this was acceptable to you, even though you probably would guess it may not have happened a lot in Pittsburgh already to have images so much identified with.
I was quite comfortable with it. It did not enhance or detract my experience. I just saw it as part of the identity of the people that were being supported.
You think that maybe some of the other groups, such as the labor movement and some other people, that might have been new to them, and it might have been an interesting had an interesting effect on them seeing this political movement coming.
Yeah, it might, especially if they were not familiar with, like I said, the Hispanic culture at all in Pittsburgh. It was non-existent.
Right.
And so it would have been a kind of an alien experience for many people. I was fortunate enough to have some previous exposure.
Okay, so that
and appreciation.
This was, even though it may have been different, probably when people saw it, that was like a positive experience. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Now here's some questions that give you a chance to sort of remember some of the things specifically. If you look back over the whole experience, would you say that it was a good experience for you in general, working on the boycott?
Well, I think so. I thought it was a growth experience for me personally, and it was a wonderful opportunity to come to terms with the world in a way that was challenging. It was difficult to be at risk every time you went to pass out leaflets, and some people got very hostile, some people were very supportive, but that's what happens when you take a stand.
And did you feel that you actually were helping the farm workers doing this? I mean, you felt
a
definite
absolutely. I felt
connection with
I did feel connected.
And it's a chance to close up by talking about maybe one or two of your favorite stories that you can recall still that happened during that time.
My favorite memory had to do with one of our demonstrations in Shadyside at a little family market, Indovinas Market, that was on Walnut Street, the main drag, in this little rather cliquish shopping area that was also populated with some students. This was a place with a lot of heavy traffic and a lot of walking traffic and very narrow sidewalks, and Indovinas Market used to put a lot of their fruits and vegetables out on the sidewalk, and the crates were out there, and of course some of them were grapes, and so that was one of the reasons why we picketed that particular site. And the store owners were good friends with the lieutenant at the local station, and they must have called him because he came down to question us. And Alvaro Rojas and I and another gentleman walked out of the group so they could continue to picket, and we talked to him about what our constitutional rights of free speech were. And even though he was demanding that we leave, and we made it very clear what the way we saw it, and we didn't need a parade permit or anything. We were not interfering with anybody's going in and out of the market, and we were passing out leaflets and asking people not to buy any grapes. And they had all kinds of things they could buy there. And he came back about 15 minutes later with a couple of paddy wagons and a crew of police support, and he said, "I don't want to hear it. You either break up or climb in the wagon." So we all tried to walk away. And as we were walking away, three of us were grabbed by the back of our neck and thrown into the paddy wagon, and said, "Oh no, you're not going anywhere." And one of them was Al Rojas, and I was one of the other two. And poor Elena, she was really upset. She and some other women got so upset, they said, "No, wait a minute, they didn't do anything different than we did," and they started trying to climb into the paddy wagons with us. And they were being excluded by these, at that time, all male police force who didn't know what to do with these screaming women. And we were taken up to the local station, and they told us that we were going to have to spend overnight in jail before we'd go to an arraignment in the morning. And it was very interesting because two things were happening at the same time. The I guess the Steelworkers Union was calling the ACLU, and the ACLU and the Steelworkers both were calling some city officials about what happened. And meantime, the three of us were sitting on the floor in the main entry area of the station, right in front of the main desk. They thought that we were supposed to be scared or something. And we were talking about how great it was because it was the day before Palm Sunday, and if we were arraigned and didn't pay a bond prior to the trial, which would have been maybe a week later, this was great because Good Friday was going to come up. We were going to get all this publicity. We were going to get all these crowds downtown in front of the local jail talking about the sufferings of Christ in this time, and we were going to get all this publicity for the farm workers. And it didn't take very long for them to move the arraignment up to that evening, and it was really funny because then the only excuse the magistrate had to look like he was supporting the police was the fact that we were singing while we were on the sidewalk. I mean, he lectured us about singing, public singing. So this was, you know, his only way of saving face with the police while letting us go. It was a lot of humor in some tough times.
So that was your first experience on the other side of the police line, so to speak.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was certainly my first attempt at seeing how politics and the law can sometimes cross different ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Well, this is going to conclude the interview with Jim Scardina, and once again, we are in Pittsburgh, actually on a Friday afternoon, April 5th, 2002, and thanks very much for sharing all the memories, Jim.
Thank you very much, Mary.